Meeting to order, and we'll call on Counselor DeBoer to read the prayer and sing O Canada, please.
Help us this day, O God, to run with patience the race that is set before us. May neither opposition without nor discouragement within divert us from our goal. Inspire us both in strength of main and steadfastness of purpose, that we may meet all fears and difficulties with unswerving courage, and may fulfill with quiet fidelity the task committed to our charge, through Jesus Christ our Lord.
Welcome, everybody, to our Tuesday, January 27th meeting. Moved by Councillor Innes, second by Councillor Groves, that the agenda January 27th, 2015 council meeting be approved. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor Innes, second by Councillor Befford, that the council should go into closed session under Section 239 of the Municipal Act for the purpose of confidential report ADM 215-005, personal matters about identifiable individuals of committee of adjustment and appointments, and confidential report ADM 215-006, personal matters about identifiable individuals, library board appointments. All in favor? Carried. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're just going to step out, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Yeah, right.
Thank you for everybody's patience. We have moved by council to come back into open session. So our two discussions were was picking representatives for the Committee of Adjustment and the Library Board. So I will now announce that is what we discussed just in closed session. Moved by Councillor Innes, second by Councillor Groves, that the confidential report ADM 215-005 regarding personal matters and identifiable individuals of Committee of Adjustment appointments be received. That the bylaw to be an act to appoint the following citizens to the Committee of Adjustment for 2014 to 2018 term of council: Joseph Metcalf, Brenda Duncan, Robert Walden, Michael Gallo, Tom Dolson, Gary Coscone, and Janet Clark. All in favor of who's been appointed? Carried. Moved by Councillor Befford, second by Councillor Shaughnessy. Confidential report ADM 215-006 regarding personal identifiable matters about individuals, the library board membership applications be received, and that the bylaw be an act to appoint the following citizens to the library board for the term of 2014 to 2018 term of council: Chris Gilmore, Suzanne French, Paula Severo, Janet Manning, Patty Foley, Alexander Keith, and Suzanne McRoberts. All in favor? Carried. congratulations to everybody that's been appointed. And thank you for the ones that weren't successful. We appreciate it was a very tough decision, and we had lots of applications. So thank you to everybody. All right, we'll move further. We have no council workshop here after a closed meeting. No introductions of new staff today or disclosure of pecuniary interest. Anybody has anything to declare? If not, we'll move on to delegations. We'll call on our first delegation. Monty Laskin is Executive Chief of Caledon Community Services for the 2015 Municipal Grant Request. And just so everybody knows, delegations have 10 minutes.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson, Councillor, for this opportunity to speak to you all today. Our request for a community grant was for $10,000 to support our communications and outreach. Now, this request... It's on. Can you hear me? Okay.
There.
So our request for a community grant was for $10,000 to support communications and outreach. To be clear, this request is separate and apart from the $8,000 that does not enter into our budget for Club Caledon. It's a flow-through. Our community grant was $5,000 in 2011, 12, and 13, $4,500 last year. And I understand that in 2015, it is being recommended at $2,000, which, not surprisingly, is causing us some concern. CCS is a growing organization. We are constantly taking on emerging challenges in our community. Each of our divisions is overseen by a very strong leadership whose collective mantra is how to do more for Caledon, how to reach more people in our community, and how to engage residents, businesses, and the entire community to make things better. Allow me to introduce Fiona Ott, the director, whose division will be using the town's community grant.
Hi, I'm Fiona Coughlin, and I represent fundraising and our two eco stores, and I'm actually all in Shea Thrift today. So if you like my outfit, that's where you can get something like it. I also cover communications. And a lot of times in our stores, we have people come in and say, I had no idea you guys were here. And that happens in a lot of our programs across the entire agency. And it's the challenges of Caledon and our vast geographic area. My job is to inform all the people of Caledon of the services that are available, the services that you are supporting. And I want to partner with all of you, each counselor. And it's actually part of our strategic plan that I do that. And together we can tell all your constituents about the services you help to make available in your wards. The sheets you received earlier today contain specific information on your wards and what's available. Please share that. And I understand Doug already asked for it electronically. So we will make sure that you have it electronically so you can include that in your newsletters. With your support, we can work together on more outreach for your wards. Improving access to services begins with communicating what is available and how to access it. We have life-changing services at Caledon Community Services, and we can make a difference in Caledon simply by making people aware of who to call for support. And on that note, I'd like to introduce Kathy Perenick-McLean, who runs Employment and Business Services.
The Employment and Development Division at CCS is home of five comprehensive and integrated development programs. Jobs Caledon Employment Services offers a variety of resources for both the job seeker and employer. Many of our employer-focused initiatives seamlessly link to the services provided by our Caledon Small Business Enterprise Center, which is operated in partnership with the town since the fall of 2010. Caledon SBEC and Jobs Caledon provide our business community with development opportunities and connection to relative supports, all in one location. Some of the supports include an online job bank where employers can post available employment opportunities and job seekers can access no matter where they live in Caledon. We also offer workshops, guest speakers, provide one-on-one and group coaching. In an effort to connect the local labor market, we work closely with local employers and staffing agencies in hosting workshops, job fairs, hiring events on a monthly basis. Jobs Caledon also facilitates employer access to hiring and training incentives that can help to offset training costs. Employers can easily connect with Jobs Caledon for details on the Canada Ontario Job Grant, otherwise known as COJG, and other available financial incentives. The next step is the Life for Youth program. It's a paid six-month program that provides an opportunity for youth to gain employability and life skills through innovative classroom instruction and various in-house work placements. To add to this, a subsidized external work placement with a Caledon employer, and this program is a win-win for both the youth and our business community. Last but not least is our A-Cafe and LINK, our language instruction for newcomers to Canada programs. Language acquisition is a vital requirement for newcomer integration into Canadian society. Our programs work to build the communication skills, self-esteem, and social networks that newcomers require for active participation in the Caledon community. And now I would like to introduce Geraldine Aguiar, Director of Health Services.
Thanks, Kathy. Hello, my name is Geraldine Aguiar, and I oversee the Health Services Division at Caledon Community Services. The slides you'll see in the deck that you have on your tables will highlight a variety of programs that we have. The focus of health services is really to address the older adult needs in Caledon. What's remarkable about our division is that we look at the total health of an individual, not just their personal care and medication needs, but as well as the needs around psychosocial, spiritual, and emotional support. When we look at older adults and seniors in Caledon, we're looking at the total picture. We work to look at what are their health needs, as well as what are those emerging needs in the community around social determinants of health. And that's what we're focused on. We want to be innovative. And what I'd like to draw your attention to is we've recently launched a health and wellness program that, in addition to the standing programs that Caledon Community Services has had historically for a long time, we're now launching a health and wellness program that addresses the unique needs of seniors, not only their health needs, but their mental health, their spiritual health, transportation, social assets. And with that, I'd like to introduce Michelle Stubbs, the Director of Community Resources. She's unfortunately not able to be here today, but Monty Laskin will be speaking on her behalf.
The Community Resource Division oversees the Exchange, volunteerism, and our student program. After 1 year of operation, the Exchange has become a community hub focusing on nutrition and community programs for all of Caledon. Food is obviously a major focus. Our food support program supplements the needs of many Caledon residents experiencing food insecurity, approximately 620 people today. Our community kitchen promotes learning about health and wellness, how to plant, prepare, and preserve locally grown food. The Exchange has also become a social destination, offering yoga, Spanish and French classes, youth program, seniors activation. CCS's focus on partnerships has brought in faith communities, businesses, farmers, schools, and community residents. We give the Exchange to pretty much anyone that is interested in it, all takers at no charge. We also have provided the key to the Exchange to eight other community organizations and created a formalized governance structure. CCS continues to assume full liability on all operating expenses. Counseling and care coordination also operates out of the Exchange. And finally, the Community Resource Division oversees volunteerism. Volunteers are integrated into every aspect of our organization's activities and projects. Approximately 420 volunteers now, offering 30,000 hours annually. The division also oversees our student program. We are extremely invested in that this year as we're striving to reshape our entire organization into a teaching center. And I'd now like to call upon our Director of Finance and Infrastructure, Denise Henderson.
Thank you, Monty. They've saved the best for last. I oversee a department of five staff, which includes HR and payroll, who support approximately 130 employees, and I also oversee the management of the organization's facilities and IT infrastructure. Our core funders are the Central West Lynn, the Ministry of Training, Colleges and Universities, Service Canada, Citizenship and Immigration, Region of Peel, United Way of Peel Region, and the Town of Caledon. All of them keep my team fairly busy with the monthly and quarterly reporting requirements. I also support and oversee the monthly financial reporting to our Board of Directors, as well as the reporting and accountability needs of all other divisions. I oversee the development and monitoring of all revenue and expenditures through an annual budget, that I develop in close collaboration with all members of the senior management team and Monty, and which is then approved by our board of directors. And in a nutshell, that's me, and I'll just close up. I'll get Monty to close up. Thank you.
So thank you all very much for the opportunity to speak to you and share with you the works of our organization. Happy to entertain any questions you might have.
Thank you, Monty, and I didn't think you were going to get under the 10 minutes. Councillor Groves, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions. Monty, thank you for the presentation, and to the ladies. Caledon Community Services obviously provides some really good programs and support for the community. A question on the Life for Youth. Are you working with the schools, the high schools?
Yes, actually, Mary, who's the manager for the program, she works closely with the high schools and the counseling departments to throughout the year. We always hope that the Life for Youth is a nine-month contract. That's typically how it works, so sometimes it's difficult to hit the timing of the schools, but definitely working with the schools.
Okay, great. Thank you. And for the health services, medication is an important thing for seniors, and sometimes what you're finding is they may mix up their medication. They may not take it on time. They may not take the right medication. I know they have the gel packs and all those things provided for them. Is that something that you assist them with? Because if they're not taking medication on time or they're not taking the proper medication, that could lead to some very serious health issues for them. So do you assist them with that?
That's absolutely included in our basket of services for our assisted living clients. In addition to those clients that don't meet that criteria, we've offered a lifeline program where if they need medication assistance or reminders, with that service, they're able to get that support.
Okay, and do you find that they are asking for the help? Because sometimes with the seniors, they won't ask. But do you find that they are asking if they need it?
It's definitely an area where we're getting an increasing amount of requests.
Okay. Okay, great. Okay. Well, thank you. And thank you again for your presentation. Nice to hear the number of volunteers. So what's the increase over, I would say, the last 5 years in volunteers?
I can't tell you the last 5 years, but I can tell you I've been fortunate enough, blessed to be at the organization for 8 years. When I came to the organization, we had about 50 volunteers. They drove. As they still do, and they worked in Shea Thrift. Under Michelle's leadership, we've really let all of our staff know that it's their job to follow, not lead. If they're not akin to doing that, they best find another organization to work with. We now have volunteers integrated in every single aspect of our agency's business and direct service operations, over 400.
Thank you. That's great, because the volunteers really, we continue to say this, but it is the truth, they are the backbone, because they provide a service, they provide a need that we can't afford to do it because of dollars. So it's great to know that. Fiona, are you having an event on the 31st?
The Toby Jug is having an event on the 31st. So it's what we call a community partner event. So they started an event, and then they contacted us about possibly partnering. And so $5 from every ticket to the comedy show is coming back to CCS.
And just wanted to plug that for you.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you, Annette.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Befford?
Yes, I too would like to thank you for the presentation. Monty, as you know, I've been interested in expanding some of the services that you offer in a more definitive way to the west side of Caledon. Caledon doesn't stop at the Gore Road, and we need some help over on the west side. I noticed that your 15 grant is for work in communications and community outreach. Could I be assured that some of that money would be used to assist in at least starting the conversation around moving some of those services to the west side of Caledon?
Yes, actually, you can be 100% assured, because it is in our strategic plan that we work together to communicate. There are services that are available in the West, and there are services that we need to communicate how to access them if it's not in the West. But there's a lot of satellite, like our job center satellite set up, and people just don't know they're there.
Right.
So we really need to communicate that. The other big thing that we're doing this year is a huge initiative around our website. We're coming into this decade with our website, making it smartphone compatible and making it accessible to everyone so that the information is there that people can get on our website, which can be accessed anywhere. And that's where our job bank will be housed as well. So there'll be ways for people to access remotely a lot of services that we offer as well. That's coming in our new development in our website, which is part of next year's budget.
Right. Well, thank you very much for that. I would like to say that if communication and outreach is important, I'd like to thank you for loaning us your bus on Saturday for the hockey tournament. And I can tell you that I had several people say, what do they do? Because your bus was running around all day with your name on it. And that's important. Thank you.
Okay, I have no further questions, but I want to thank all of you for taking the time and coming and sharing the good news that you do for our community, and we thank you for that. So best of luck, and thank you so much for coming. Having said that, we'll move on to our second delegation, Randy McLeod, the Peel Federation of Agriculture. We'll give you 10 minutes as well.
Well, good afternoon, Mayor and members of Council. I must say that when I walked in, I was kind of a little surprised at the seating arrangement we have here today, but I guess after 4 years, it's time for a change. So I'm here today asking for Council to invest $5,000 in Peel Federation of Agriculture. And last year, I believe we had a grant of $3,500, but we have, along with every other organization, experienced an increase in costs, postage being one of them. We're also needing more meeting space, and one of the reasons why we need more meeting space and times is the GTA West Corridor is going to carve off a large piece of the agricultural land of the southern portion of Caledon, and with that is going to come a lot of implications for agriculture and the operators that are operating currently there. With that, and kind of piggybacking with it, is the notion that there may be somewhat of a greenbelt expansion. They're not going to label it the greenbelt. It may be called the food belt. And the land that is laying north of this GTA West, but south of the existing greenbelt, may be put in some kind of a food production belt. And it's through Peel Federation's involvement that through these the meetings that we get to hear what the troops are doing out there. And we need this funding to be able to continue on as an operation and learn just what's happening. So that's why we're asking for your support. I attended the GTAAC meeting, which is Greater Toronto Area Agricultural Action Committee meeting last week. And when it came time for Peel's report on what's happening, I mentioned this. And in my report, I let that loose. And at my table was Mark Head, senior planner with the Region of Peel. And also in attendance was Kathy McPherson, executive director of the Friends of the Greenbelt. Not a word was said from either one of those following that meeting. So to me, I think that that may be something that's actually in the works. And so I think that Peel Federation of Agriculture is something that should be continuing on our investigation as to what we're going to learn from this. Also at that meeting, there was a resolution from that group to place on the boards of directors of the two conservation authorities, the CVC and the TRCA, a direct representative from agriculture. And we passed at a previous meeting a resolution, and it passed unanimously. Well, last week's meeting, that resolution, it didn't quite go to the back burner. It's kind of went to the fridge. And it's just going to go nowhere. And the head of the Toronto Region Conservation Authority was there, and we had a debate in the meeting, and I said that we needed agricultural representative on this so that they looked at things from an agricultural perspective and could provide input at the very at the source. And he looked at me and he said the primary responsibility of a member on the TRCA's board is to the board. So I was not comfortable with that, but I think that I wanted to bring it back here today and share that with council so that our new representative on the TRCA's board is well aware of what leadership at the top of the board is actually saying. So,
okay,
we're a little off topic here, but I wanted this to get out there. So there you go. This is what the PFA is doing. We're the only organization that's representing agriculture in the town of Kell in the region of Peel, and I'm asking for your investment of $5,000.
Okay, thank you very much. I do have one question for you so far, and that's Councillor Innes. You, no doubt. I know it's supposed to be about the grant, but I think you need to.
Well, firstly, I'd like to say thank you, Randy, for coming. And I do know the good work that your organization does. And I do think that council does need to seriously look at considering them for the grant, especially considering the review that is coming forward. They do need that resource to further their good work and providing comments from our agricultural community. I would also like to perhaps suggest, taking from Randy's thoughts here, that during the review of the Conservation Act, that council include in their recommendations to the province that we do recommend a representative being sent to the boards of conservation from the agricultural community. And I would also ask that we look at asking the GTC, Greater Toronto Country Mayors Alliance, to also do the same. And thank you, Randy, for your presentation.
Okay, and I'll take that as direction. Also, we're going to be having appointments coming down later for the Etobicoke and Mimicoke and watersheds. And I know it's tough to get councillors on, but maybe this is something we can put agricultural representation on going forward. Councillor Groves.
Thank you. If I recall, when this review came forward before a few years ago, none of this was taken into consideration. I think the province just moved ahead and everything went forward. Is that the one I'm thinking of? We had a delegation from the Federation. We had representation here. So again, I would concur with and support Randy's request that this be taken into consideration. We know that you met with Mr. Denny and expressed your concerns, and I think they were very valid concerns that you expressed, and I know that Councillor Innes is going to represent you very well on the TRCA because she's quite familiar with the issues of the Federation, and she is going to take those forward to the Federation. I think also did you touch the Greenbelt?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so we did have a meeting at the meeting I attended. Not your last meeting, but the meeting prior to that, you talked about, and Tim Manley was at that meeting about the Greenbelt review. And I'm just wondering where we are with that, if somebody can answer that for me.
I think that's planning at this point.
Through Mayor Thompson to Councillor Groves, the Development Approval Planning Policy Department actually started to look at the 10-year review of all the provincial plans. So last year we started an interactive website where we were soliciting comments from people in regards to that review. At this point in time, we have not officially heard from the province yet on the review, but the review is supposed to happen in 2016.
Okay, so the Federation had some strong position on the Greenbelt review, and again, I would hope that those positions, as we move forward into that review, that they are going to be taken seriously into consideration. I think there were a number of heritage linkages and things like that. And Tim is very much aware, and I think he had made a commitment to some workshops and some other things in walking properties and that. And walking the properties is very important because a lot of times these lines are being drawn and they're designating things, and it really isn't. It's not a heritage linkage system. It's not a wetland. It's not a woodlot. It's just people planting trees or putting a little pond in there. And there, so I guess it's giving direction to make sure that whatever you raised at that meeting going forward in that review, that it gets followed up on. And I support you for the grant.
Okay. Councillor McClure.
Yes, thank you for the presentation. I know the Federation does a lot of good work in the town, and I'll certainly support you for this grant. You do a lot of good work. Thanks.
Councillor Befford.
Thanks, Randy. Appreciate you coming, and we'll consider that $5,000, not $10,000. What you said about the change in definition, if I got it right, for some lands to basically food production areas intrigues me, and yet I haven't heard anything about it. So I'm wondering, Mr. Mayor, if, you know, as a result of this delegation, we can somehow get some information to councillors as to what this is, what the definition means, what it could mean to us. I would really appreciate that, and thanks for bringing it to our attention, Randy.
I'll clarify a little bit. Just before the election back in August, this came out. There were some of the councillors came forward saying we need to expand the green belt. Well, you can't under because those legislation changed. So they came with a food belt, is the vision that they had on it. And it's something the province has been looking at for all classes 1 to 4 lands across the province of Ontario to put it all in, not just the specific area. They've been working with the farm organizations on this, where there's been a lot of conversation back and forth. What's happened is we've had political interest groups get involved. The interesting part is the group of 16 that were pushing hard for it, 12 of them never were returned to their seats. One was the mayor of Guelph even. The other mayors did return, but it makes it interesting going forward. We have to be cognizant. The rural municipalities of Ontario are very engaged and work very closely with the farm organizations going forward on this. It's something not to be taken lightly. The farm groups did report back saying, well, look, if you want to put it into the food belt, this is what you need to look at. We need access to high-speed internet, natural gas, access to municipal water, three-phase hydro, tile draining on lands to improve land quality, and also good access to our arterial road network, good road infrastructure. Province has heard that. They've just put their tail between their legs and ran. So I think this is where this food belt has kind of gone off on us. And I know we're talking about is a budget delegation, but I'm just trying to clarify that maybe at some point we'll come back and just kind of fill in with a report back to council so everybody's all on the same page. And the Federation's well aware, but I think it's very cognizant. And I think, Randy, to get back on, thank you for your delegation. I really appreciate it. And I think what you're asking is fair, because also we got to say is we don't have an agricultural policy working group. As you noticed, the last term of council, it wasn't very effective. But the Peel Soil and Crop and the Peel Federation of Agriculture has been very engaging with our planning staff and our engineering groups. And I think we've been able to get a lot accomplished with what we already have versus starting another group and taking up people's time. So I think that's very cognizant. And I think we've had a good relationship. And as you go forward and you're asked, but I think that's one thing you have to definitely emphasize is for the investment you put into the Peel Federation, this is what we're giving back to help the town do a bit, make and better their decisions, as well as the region of Peel and the city of Brampton. So I think, thank you for coming and delegating. And we'll.
One thing I'd like to add was that PFA is finalizing the details now, but I have a contact with one of the guys who was negotiated for the land purchase for some of the parcels of land for the 410. And through him, we're setting up a meeting so that he's coming. He's bringing one of the appraisers, and he's also going to bring a lawyer who specializes in expropriation. and we're going to have a meeting, and we're going to try and keep the numbers down to just those farm operators that are going to be affected by the 413, and we would welcome any council member that wants to attend that meeting as well.
Thank you.
It will happen in it's probably going to be 2 months from now, from today.
Okay.
So, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move now on to regular business. We can just go right through the itinerary. We're going to do announcements, and Daryl, if you can please stand up with that trophy of ours. Actually, we had the Councillor Befford had the was part of the Alton Pond Hockey Tournament, and since Chief Warfire, the coach, isn't here, we've got our star player who made all the plays for us. Our Public Works Director was a goal scorer, very similar to our town crier. And he did it in style. Like, you ever watch Toy Story when they were saying we're falling in style? He did it. And the rest of us were just there in the way. And I have to say, and I was one of those participants. But we did win 8-6. We're against the Alton businesses, along with their fearless leader, Matthew Strader, who braved himself out there as well. And I think the only reason what was the incentive why they didn't want to win it was he couldn't drink from the cup. But having said that, the town of Callan Notables were victorious. The final score was, I believe, 8-6. Councillor Befford did a great job of doing the play-by-play by Foster Hewitt, but I think he couldn't take the Foster Hewitt claim because he was more like the Danny Gallivan. The Foster Hewitt, I think, had to go to our town crier, Andrew Welch. He did a terrific job through the day. But it was a very good event, but I thought we should at least come and show our trophy. And it has to get returned to Walton Mill under the care or the curator of Councillor Befford, but I thought, well, at least we can show that and recognize that we're victorious. And thank you for all who have participated. And Mr. Loveridge, your one spinning goal coming on a breakaway, and he put it all in show again. Like, I mean, he just jumps the boards. Like, but we it was cheap entertainment. Councillor Befford?
Well, as the announcer, I was waiting with you playing to be able to say he shoots, he scores, or that was a cannonading drive, but unfortunately I didn't get a chance to do either with you.
You got that right. Anyway, but we did have fun, and I know some of the staff were here, and I know Rita's still pulling herself together from the weekend, from laughing so hard. But anyway, that's the announcements. Has anybody else got announcements they want to bring forward on this at this point? If not, we're going to go to urgent business. And is that the first one is Councillor Befford? Okay, moved by Councillor Befford, second by Councillor Shaughnessy, that this motion without notice to be introduced regarding the Alton Legion Branch 449 is as it is time sensitive. So is this the one right here?
So you need to vote on that to give
them. Okay, all in favor of this? Bring it forward. Okay, carried. Does everybody know what we're doing here? Like, it's just normal. We're bringing a notice of motion forward that's time sensitive.
Through your worship, just so everyone's understand. So an item that is not placed on the agenda, in order for council to make a decision on it, it is required that a motion without notice, be brought forward to council. So in order for you to even listen to this item that's not listed on the agenda, council needs to vote to say, yes, it's okay to speak to that item. So now that you've adopted that motion, the motion which is referring to it will now be placed on the floor. Certainly. I'll let the mayor read it first.
Okay. Moved by Councillor Befford, second by Councillor Shaughnessy. Whereas the Canadian government recognizes the service of the Canadian Armed Forces in Afghanistan, and whereas the recognition and memory of such service of the Canadian government is providing up to 250 replica LAV-111s, light armored vehicles, to qualifying communities. Whereas the Alton Legion has expressed an interest in securing such a vehicle to become a monument at the Legion's premises in Alton. And whereas the Alton Legion has strong community organization and furthered the support of all Canadians, specifically Caledon residents who have served in our country, and whereas the Alton Legion will accept full responsibility to secure and mount and maintain any such monument. Therefore, be resolved that the Council of the Town of Caledon support the monument program application from the Alton Legion Branch 449 to secure an LAV 111, with a full understanding that all the costs and maintenance for the monument will be provided by the Alton Legion. Councillor Beffert.
I would just like to comment that I learned about this last week. The Alton Legion has asked for our support simply by saying that we think it's a good idea for them to do that. The Alton Legion is our only legion in Caledon. This is a project that they would like to do. You may have noticed at other locations there are tanks and there are guns and there are planes. In this particular case, it's a piece of equipment that was used in Afghanistan. We've recently had a young fellow come back from Afghanistan who is an Alton resident and helps us out on our Remembrance Day. It would simply be an opportunity for them to make a base and have this vehicle transported from London, where it will be presented to the Alton Legion, and they will look after the rest of it. They just it's time sensitive in that the application has to be in by Friday of this week.
That's right.
And so I'm just asking if you would all just recognize on their behalf that it's a good thing, and we help them whenever way we can, but there is no money attached.
Any further questions? If not, I'm going to call the vote. All in favor? It's unanimous. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go now on to the notices of motion that have been printed in the agenda. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, seconded by Councillor Innes. Whereas the Town of Caledon regulates open air fires and precautions to be observed by persons setting out fires, and whereas the burn permit is required prior to the setting of a fire, and whereas bylaw 96-59 prohibits open air fires in any settlement area known in the Town of Caledon's official plan. Whereas a number of residents have expressed concerns regarding this prohibition, therefore it be resolved that staff and Fire Emergency Services Department be directed to investigate the feasibility of permitting open air fires on lots greater than a half acre in settlement areas within the official plan and report back to council. Councillor DeBoer.
Yeah, just so there's some more clarification, I think in conversations that a few of us have had with the chief, issues arose once they moved to fire permits online through mapping and different things, and a number of people were actually excluded that had always been getting permits. And I think the staff and deputy chief were looking at reviewing that part of it, and we had a number of people ask about the idea of being able to have permits or a burn permit for their smaller properties, be it that they're cleaning up or be it that on a Saturday night having a family, small little family backyard fire was all part of what we were asked. So I think I've had a number of people talk to me on both sides of the issue. I think what we need to do is staff, I would suggest, are probably going to have a public meeting at some point in time to share the changes, and that's the time that those in favor of it and those opposed need to come forward, and we need to have a good discussion. But if we do permit fires and open air burning in more areas in some of the rural communities and villages, the people have to realize that it is a privilege and that you have to burn with responsibility. I think that's the intent of having some of the discussion, in that know what your neighbors are doing, and if the laundry is on the line, don't have a smoky fire, try and have one with dry wood.
Okay.
So thank you.
Councillor Misipelli.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. I support looking into this. One thing that kind of popped out to me, I just wanted to ask the question of the chief, is, and I see that there's a specific indication, lots greater than half an acre. And the question I just wanted to pose is, does the fire service issue burn permits on lots, and I guess this is in settlement areas, that are smaller than half an acre? I just wanted to know if we might exclude people in this review that had received burn permits in the past.
So currently, burn permits are issued on a in a settlement area. So it's basically on the area that they currently live, regardless of the size of property. So that would be the inclusion or exclusion at this time. The report's going to allow the fire service to do a comprehensive report, and as well as an education component. We're going to have to review our online service provider currently, how the burn permits are issued, and whether it's going to be size of lots, distance from property. Like, all these things are going to have to factor in on any changes that we'd recommend with regard to the burn permit.
Okay, so when you say a comprehensive review, you will be looking at all lots? I just saw this as excluding lots under half an acre from the review.
Basically, it's my understanding that these would be in addition. So currently, we issue burn permits. So if they're currently in an area where they're allowed to burn, most likely we would continue issuing those permits. This would be the inclusion to the different areas that are of size of half an acre or greater.
Okay, I just want to show that it's a comprehensive review.
Yes.
And similarly to Councillor DeBoer's comments, you know, a public, you know, ability to comment on the subject and have their opinions heard, I think, is important as well.
Understood.
Thanks.
Thank you. No further questions. I'll call a vote. All in favor? It's carried. Next one is moved by Councillor Bedford, second by Councillor Shaughnessy. Whereas the Lafarge-operated Pinckney Pit, located on Mississauga Road, south of Charleston, has become an active and after a very long period of dormancy. And whereas the section of the town-operated Mississauga Road is an approved haul route for the Pinckney Pit. And whereas Mississauga Road is not constructed for heavy trucks, and whereas the truck traffic presents safety issues on a narrow section of road, whereas truck traffic creates dust, noise, vibration, and quality of life issues for the residents of that community. Therefore, be resolved that Town of Callan work with Lafarge, the Credit Valley Conservation, Ministry of Natural Resources, the Niagara Escarpment Commission, the Region Appeal to prove an alternate haul route through the abutting rehabilitation pension pit, now owned by CVC, which is exiting onto Charleston Side Road at the old entrance of the pension pit. And further, that this motion be forwarded to Lafarge, CVC, MNR, NEC, and the Region Appeal. No questions? All call a question. All in favor? Carried. Okay, I need a seconder for this motion of Councillor Groves concerning whereas the Ontario Building Code Act 1992, SO 92, Chapter 23, as amended, regulate the issuing of building permits, which is under Section 8, Clause 2A, the chief building official shall issue a permit unless the proposed building construction or demolition will contravene this act, the building code, or any other applicable law. And whereas the Ontario Regulation 191-14, amending Ontario Regulation 332-12, sets out a Division A, Section 14-3-3, the current definition of applicable law. And whereas the lengthy list of statutes under any proposed building construction, alteration, or demolition must be comply the order of the building permit to be issued within a set time and period. Whereas the chief building official may revoke a permit issued under the Building Code Act if issued or mistaken, false or incorrect information, or if the construction or demolition has not commenced or has been suspended or discontinued, or at any request to be revoked by the applicant if the term under the condition of the building permit has not been met. Therefore, it be resolved that the Council directs staff to prepare a report outlining a building permit must be issued, the definition of applicable law that requires a complete building permit application, the eligibility of requirements for a conditional building permit, the company timelines to accept or to reject the building permit application, timelines to issue or refuse the building permit application, and finally, a permit may be revoked. Further, the report be presented at the February 10th, 2015 regular council meeting. Now, I need a seconder. Councillor Shaughnessy, thank you. Any questions? Oh, we do have several. Councillor Mazzapelli.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. And I apologize. I did mean to ask Councillor Groves in advance, but I didn't get the chance. I'm just curious or want to understand the intent of the motion, what we're trying to get, the deliverable, if I may. Please. Thanks.
Through you, Mr. Chair, to Councillor Mezzapelli. There's been some questions raised in the community about the issuance of building permit as they apply to the to some of the building code. There's been changes and amendments to the building code. So it's just for information so that staff can come back with a report. The chief building official, as we know, does not he's not under council's jurisdiction. He is under the province of Ontario's jurisdiction. So council has the chief building official, as I understand it, reports to the province of Ontario and not to council. So this is just for information so that building permits, when they are issued, it is clear to the public on the issuance and how they comply to these, to the act and the regulations.
Okay. Any further questions, Councillor Mezzapelli? Councillor DeBoer?
Knowing that there's quite a bit of information, is it doable? I guess the question, you've got a date here, February 10th. Just questioning whether staff, whether that's a timeline that's reasonable and workable.
Through Mayor Thompson to Councillor DeBoer, because the notice of motion was actually on 2 weeks ago, the report is drafted and ready to go for the 10th.
Okay, and then the other question, because we've got three new members of council and probably some of the rest of us probably could use an update. Is there enough time on that agenda for a presentation from the CBO as to how the building department operates, building department section operates, for lack of a better word, a Coles Notes version, because I think we could probably spend a day on it, but is there an opportunity to actually do a bit of a workshop?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, to Councillor DeBoer, if that is what council is now asking for on top of the report, I would suggest that that would need to be at a different council meeting, not the council meeting on the 10th, to be able to give the staff the time to prepare that workshop material appropriately. This is a report that's been drafted, not a workshop, so that we would have time to actually talk to you and we could have further discussions. And I would want to know exactly what you as council would like to see in that workshop.
Yeah, okay, and I think that it's probably valuable down the line, because I think everybody on council is going to get questions as to how a building permit gets held up, what's all involved into it, what's the process, and maybe that is something that's worthy, maybe after budget even.
Yeah, after budget, I was wondering if maybe even a presentation, you know, we can give some time for a presentation versus a workshop. I think that's doable. But I think if once we get the budget out of the way, I'm sure we can work on that. Okay, Councillor Befford.
Well, I guess my questions have been answered. I was going to say there's an awful lot here to be asked. And I guess the other side of it is residents that I have spoken to in the last short period of time have clearly indicated to me that the information they're getting about being building permits is changing, and that our chief building official has been more than helpful in making things happen. So I guess that's why we can write the report so quickly. So thanks.
Okay. Councillor Groves, were you or just, yes?
I just wanted to respond to Councillor Befford with regards to the chief building official. I think we've heard some very good things about him and some of the work that he is doing. So just wanted to, yeah.
Okay. Call a question. All in favor? Carried. Is there any further notices of motion that need to come forward? I'm going to start at this side and come across. Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you. First, I'd like to thank the Planning Department for helping write this. I appreciated it. Whereas the number of people aged 65 and over in Ontario is projected to double by 2041, and the town of Caledon is no exception, and whereas council supports the town to become an age-friendly community, and whereas the key elements for an age-friendly community can only be identified through consultation, and whereas the town is required to initiate a statutory review of its official plan in the near future, Therefore, it be resolved that official plan policies to support an age-friendly community be developed through the official plan review process based on in-depth analysis and stakeholder consultation, and that all community initiatives for an age-friendly community be directed to planning staff for consideration in the official plan review, and that staff be directed to cease their involvement in the proposed project known as Sun Valley Development, Heather Glen Village, located immediately north of Callum Village between Highway 10 and Kennedy Road. That these staff resources be directed to develop and report to council on policies and initiatives that will ensure seniors' housing occurs. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Misapelli, do you have anything?
No.
Councillor Innes. Councillor Shaughnessy, if you can shut your mic off, that'll help.
They don't want to hear me.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have three notice of motions for this afternoon. The first one is, whereas transparency and accountability are the very foundation of good governance, and whereas the Town of Caledon has an official plan and a community-based strategic plan to guide the overall financial direction, growth, and future of the community, and whereas the implementation of a council-directed work plan for the term of council will play a meaningful role in determining the immediate policies and procedures for the municipality, providing input for the municipality's annual capital and operating budgets for the term of council, and whereas a council-directed work plan consisting of easily understood, plain language, actionable, and measurable priorities individually championed by a member of council and a member of the senior management team could be more easily supported by the taxpayers of Caledon, therefore furthering the municipality's transparency and accountability. Therefore, be it resolved that Council reenact the Caledon Community Work Plan for the current term of Council, and further that staff be directed to develop a process and implementation plan and report back to Council by March 10th, 2015 for approval.
Okay.
Number two. Whereas providing quality, economical, and efficient service to our residents is a key priority of Council, and whereas providing a high level of service to our residents means removing the red tape and making changes that results in our residents and businesses experiencing real positive change, and whereas the engagement of the Town of Caledon employees, residents, and businesses to provide valuable input into potential actions to improve service delivery is necessary for optimal success, and whereas each new initiative by the town should be vetted by our residents and businesses to benefit from their perspective to continue to improve and deliver quality service, therefore, be it resolved that the Town of Caledon create a client-centered task force to engage the Town of Caledon's employees, residents, and businesses to determine actionable items to improve service delivery, and further that this task force conduct a full review of the Town of Caledon's administrative service standards from the perspective of our residents and businesses, and therefore that staff be directed to develop a terms of reference for a client-centered task force, which includes a work plan of priorities and report back to Council by April 14, 2015 for approval. And finally, whereas the employees of the Town of Caledon are a valued entity within the corporation and constitute as 49% of the operating budget in 2014, whereas providing quality service delivery to our residents is a council priority and requires continuity of staffing to ensure an optimal level of corporate memory and community knowledge, therefore, be it resolved that the Department of Human Resources be directed to develop an employee retention policy aimed at reducing the turnover rate and report back to Council for approval by April 14, 2015. And further, that the Office of the Mayor, with the assistance of the Human Resources Department, conduct an annual confidential employee engagement survey with the results being provided directly to Council by April 14, 2015.
Okay. Councillor Misapelli, you had your...
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. I just wanted the notices of motion that I heard, and certainly they sound supportable. I'm not offering any opinion in that regard. I've made the comment before, and I want to make it again. I think it's imperative that as we issue motions, that we hear back from staff as well as to the implications, whether it's based on the work schedule or financial, and that we understand that. I clearly understand that there is a work plan and process already, and very well these could be good additions.
Rob, I hate to cut you off. This is just introducing.
Right.
The debate is in the next council.
I just know that when they come back, I think council needs to hear that.
Yeah.
as a part of the review of what's being asked.
Yeah.
I think that's important information for council to have.
Okay.
So I apologize if it was at the wrong time, but that's...
Yeah, no, I just thought I'd better just... Or we're going to get into
that's
a lengthy discussion, but thank you. Councillor Befford, do you have a notice of motion?
Yes, I do. Whereas the Town of Caledon official plan policies and the Niagara Escarpment Plan allow the development of a second residence on a property if the first residence is a designated heritage building, and whereas the Niagara Escarpment Commission is considering expanding its policy to allow the placement of a heritage home on a developed lot, hereby be it resolved that the Town of Caledon supports a change in NEC policy to allow heritage homes to be moved onto developed lots when it can be demonstrated that there is no negative environmental impact, no negative scenic impact, and no negative impact on neighboring residences and any other policy changes that would facilitate the preservation of Ontario's heritage. That the Town of Caledon supports a change in the Caledon official plan to allow for a heritage home to be moved onto a developed lot subject to suitable conditions inside or outside of the NEP. That the mayor write to the NEC expressing Caledon's support of a policy change and forward a copy of this resolution to the NEC, and that this motion and the letter be copied to Sylvia Jones, MPP, and the Region Appeal.
Okay. Okay. Councillor DeBoer, do you have anything? Councillor Downey's not here. Oh. You're all done, right? Yep. Okay, we got a senior's moment here.
Yeah, can you wait for me, Nick?
Okay, no problem.
Sorry about that. My second notice of motion, whereas the Caledon Pool was decommissioned in 2014 due to a number of health and safety concerns, and whereas the Town of Orangeville has a pool which is in close proximity to Ward 1 residents in the Town of Caledon, now therefore be it resolved that staff in the Parks and Recreation Department be directed to consult with the Town of Orangeville to determine if there is an opportunity to offer aquatics programming to residents in Ward 1 at the Town of Orangeville's resident rate and report back to Council.
Okay.
Now I'm finished.
You're finished. Councillor DeBoer, you're on.
I guess, and I don't want to get in trouble like Councillor Mazzapelli did, but he makes a valid point. And that we get a notice of motion today, it'll come to the next council meeting, and we're going to either support it or not. Now, today I was able to ask staff as to whether the timing of the building permit one was valid. But if some of these motions comes with a cost or staffing time or something else associated with it, I think some of that information needs to be part of the information that we get when the motion comes back, because that's one of the reasons. One of the reasons we get it now is so that we can think about it, so that we've had a chance to do some research. But I think staff, is it realistic for staff to come up with, an idea of, is there a cost associated with it? Is there a time frame? Is there even somebody in the department or resource that can do it? So I'm questioning maybe whether the clerk or the CEO,
I got an answer
or something
for you.
To it.
We're going to get the clerk to give you the answer.
Yeah. She had it on for a while there.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Councillor DeBoer. Of course, when a motion comes on the floor, at any time, Council at that point can direct for that notice of motion. You can ask for more information at that time or a staff report be created. So when the actual motion is on the floor, that is your time. You can amend it and ask for more information before you make a decision.
Do you have anything else, Councillor DeBoer? You don't have any notice motion. You just raise the hand. All right. Councillor Groves, do you have anything this time? Okay. Councillor Groves, I'm going to start back because we might as well go at this and get this done. Council inquiries, do you have anything?
I do.
Okay.
Thank you. Not sure how staff can advise me if I'm stepping out of line here but we've had some concerns raised throughout the public meetings on the Canadian Tire facility. Some of those concerns that were raised were truck traffic, diesel fumes, health issues, environmental issues, the hydrogen producing facility on that particular development. I'm just wondering, I know this is at the board and this is where I don't know if I'm stepping out of line or I'm not supposed to be talking about this, but I would just like to know how do we get those, I'm putting it out there that these are the concerns raised by the community and how do they get addressed throughout this board process or how does it work?
Ms. Hall, can you help me on this?
Your mayor and through Mayor Thompson to Councillor Groves. Because the matter is before the Ontario Municipal Board, as Councillor Groves has indicated, one of the parties that is before the Ontario Municipal Board is representing the residents of the community. They have issued an issues list to the parties, and those issues will be addressed through evidence provided by all the parties on either for or against, and that is a public process. So all of that information will be provided through Canadian Tire, the residence group, region, town, or whoever needs to provide that evidence at the board at that point in time. So that is a public process and open to anyone who wishes to participate or attend. And right now we're still at the pre-hearing stage, so we can still have anyone can come to any of the pre-hearings and ask if they want to be a participant or a party at any point in time to determine if, and the board makes that call if they will be elected.
So it can only be addressed through the board?
Yes, because the matter is now before the board, not through the town at this point in time.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor DeBoer, do you have any council inquiries? Councillor Bedford?
Yes, I have one, and it relates to the plans, as I understand them, to provide high-speed internet for the Pan Am Games so that the Pan Am Games can be broadcast worldwide. A question came from a resident who has asked me, and I don't know the answer, are there any plans subsequent to the Pan Am Games to allow for local residents to improve their internet service because of the plans that we're putting together for the Pan Am Games? And I don't know who can answer that.
I'm going to get Mr. Barnes to probably answer that.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Thompson. There will be, I believe there will be some opportunities. We haven't talked to the providers about how they would go about some of the connections. But the proposal right now is that Bell Canada will run high-speed optical fiber through Bolton all the way to the Palgrave site. And Rogers, I believe on the other side, will be running from the north end of King Township across to Palgrave as well. So in those instances, there might be actual opportunities to connect to fiber. But my understanding as well is that, especially in terms of cell phone connections and so on, a 5-kilometer radius of service will be improved from that site.
Thank you. Councillor McClure?
I'd be interested in the same thing that Councillor Bedford's interested in, because I was trying to get hooked onto the internet for my council problems, and it's not available on Credit View Road right now.
You're just going to have to feed your pigeons more. Councillor Innes?
Could I ask for, through you, Mr. Mayor, to David Leverage, I'm assuming, or the fire department, could I have an update on the construction of the new fire hall? Where are we? Are we on schedule? Will the tenders be sent out in time, and what is the timeline for that process?
Mr. Leverage?
Through you, Mayor Thompson. Councillor Innes, so we've completed the statement of requirement phase. So in other words, we have a firm idea of what all the full requirements are for the fire hall at this point. We've already hired a consultant, a design engineer, to do the design work. They've completed an initial work. And now that we've finalized the SOR, they're going to finalize the initial specification and drawings for the facility. Our plan is that we'd like to get together with the local councillors within the next month to update and also to provide a public forum time for people within the community to take a look at what we're looking at, what we're planning, what the building may look at, talk about access, you know, where the emergency vehicles will enter and exit and all that. I'd like to be able to do that before the March break. So, and at that point, concurrent with that, we'll be getting ready for specification, hoping to be out on the street sometime late March, early April, with construction this year.
Okay. Councilor Misipelli.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Two items, if I may, and I may be having an early seniors moment because I think I've asked this before, but I don't recall the answer. inquiring about the status of our application to the government for reimbursement-related costs related to the ice storm, wondering what we know about that and if we know anything, if it has any potential budget implications.
Ms. Tollett.
Through you, Mayor Thompson. Sorry, excuse my voice. It's not the best yet. We submitted our claim. We had a claim at the end of December for roughly $800,000. We actually just received confirmation yesterday of a slew of questions they have, probably four pages long. So we're just going through that and then sending our responses. They are working through our application, so that's good news. We don't know when we'll get that. Hopefully we'll hear back in the next couple months. But originally we didn't think it would be back until April, but we are getting responses now. So.
Okay. So my follow-up question is, if we are successful, and I hope we are, is the intention to throw that money into reserves to build up? I guess we have to go to reserves to pay for those, the work we had to undertake.
In the end part of 2013, we had to use quite a bit of our reserve to fund the winter maintenance, and we do anticipate that same problem for 2014. So one of the recommendations for year-end will be to put any surplus related to the ice storm grant into the reserve, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Second one, Councilor Groves had mentioned the Canadian Tire application, and I just want a clarification. To me, it's imperative that we have clear and concise information. She indicated hydrogen generation on site. The application that the town received, did it include hydrogen generation or just hydrogen consumption, like a dispensing filling station?
Is that planning or fire? Coming? Okay.
Through you, Mayor Thompson, to Councillor Mezzapelli. This did come up at some point in time recently. We did go back and check the site plans. The site plans do show storage of hydrogen on site due to the fact that there is certain equipment that is actually using hydrogen gas to move. I'm not sure if it's tractor trailers or maybe
it's
fire chief.
Tow motors, I think.
Tow motors, yes. So there is storage that's happening on site.
So it's storage in dispensing to fill those vehicles?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Shaughnessy, any inquiries? No? Okay, thank you very much. We've had an active group here. So now we're going to move on to RB1. If everybody's following through, the Office of the Integrity Commissioner Annual Report 2014. Moved by Councillor Misipelli. Second by Councillor Befford, that the report ADM 215-003 regarding the Office of the Integrity Commissioner Annual Report 2014 be received. Any questions? Councillor Misipelli.
Very quickly, Mayor Thompson. In his report on page RB 1.3 in section 2.3, the third paragraph, he indicates his concern of the addition of municipal government to the role of the provincial ombudsman and several other changes. And then it's kind of left. I'm just wondering if council can receive some further information as to why he has concerns. Is that something that I would be able to ask?
Absolutely, and I'm glad you asked that. I did have something circled about that earlier on, but so, no, thank you for bringing that forward, and we've taken note of that, and Mr. Barnes will make sure we get that clarified for us.
Thank you very kindly.
Thank you very much for asking. Councillor Befford?
Yes, in the report, he mentions the enacted council code of conduct. This code of conduct, and I was on the committee that helped generate it, is not that old. And now that we've had an opportunity for a term of office with it, I'm wondering if there's a need to sit down and review it to make sure that it's accurate. Is it underway?
Yeah. I think we do have a council motion on that, do we not?
Okay.
I'll,
Through
the
your worship to Councillor Beffert, yes, earlier this year you did pass a motion in order to review the council code of conduct, and you will find in your council calendars that the integrity commissioner does intend to meet with you individually, so that may be an opportunity to ask questions in regards to accountability and any other issues you may have.
Okay. Any further questions? If not, I'm calling the question. All in favor?
Carried.
RB2, moved by Councillor Councillor Groves and Councillor Innes. They report ADM to. Oh, she's not here. Come on, get back in here. Okay. The report ADM 215-004 regarding post-election accessibility report be received. Any no questions? All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor Groves, second by Councillor Beffert, that the report ADM 215-009 regarding a lease agreement between the Town of Caledon, the Village Agricultural Society, and the Town regarding the land use comprising of the Caledon Village Baseball Diamond Facilities and the Outdoor Rink be received, and that the Mayor and Clerk authorize and execute a lease agreement between the Caledon Agricultural Society and the Town of Caledon for the use of the Caledon Village Baseball Diamond Facilities and Outdoor Rink. Any further questions? Oh, Councillor Beffert?
Yes, I notice that it's mentioned specifically the outdoor ice rink. And I guess my question is prefaced by that the Recreation Department, I think, has done an excellent job of going out to the villages. I don't know if there's more than one, but they went to Alton and they worked with the residents and they determined how a local community can have a rink. And as part of that, there were a number of issues that had to be adhered to. So many volunteers, they had to have a workshop, and I know the one in Alton is doing just tremendously. My question is, are the same rules in place for this outdoor rink as are in place for the outdoor rinks that would be elsewhere in Caledon Village or Inglewood or Bell Fountain or anywhere else?
Ms. Johnson?
Through you, Mayor Thompson. Yes, Councillor Beffert, we have a community rink procedure, and this arrangement covers that, where the town will inspect once a week and the volunteers maintain the rink.
Thank you very much. Okay. Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks. And it's on the same lines, because we have actually had concerns with the group that was managing the one in Mono Mills, kind of concerned about that whole rink policy procedures, and they weren't happy with it. So I'm just wondering if we can figure out how many people are and aren't, and maybe have some discussions with the group there and better explanation, just so that we've got it resolved before
Ms. Johnson?
Next season.
Through you, Mayor Thompson. Councillor DeBoer, we have just finished a recruitment for a strategic coordinator in the Recreation Department, and that's part of his portfolio, is to look at the arrangements that we have with you, with our user groups, and to try and have a more equitable way that we manage all of the findings that they're bringing forward. So in 2014, that will be, or 2015, what year are we? Yeah, that will be one of our focuses.
Okay, no further questions. I'll call the question. All in favor? Carried. RB4, moved by Councillor Beffert, second by Councillor Misipelli, that the report ADM 215-011 regarding the appointment of the Hills of Headwaters Tourism Association be received. That blank councillor be appointed to the Hills of Headwaters Tourism Association for 2014 to 2018 term of council. Do we have a victim? Councillor Beffert, you served on this a long time.
I have, Mayor Thompson, and I guess a couple of comments. First of all, I have served two terms, and as much as I appreciate being there, sometimes I think you reach a shelf life.
Yeah.
I also think very strongly that this councillor should be an area councillor, the reason being that all of the meetings, and I believe they're published, are on Thursdays, and they're regional council days. But this is a very, very important committee. Personally, I would sit on it again. However, I have applied to the Niagara Escarpment Commission, have no idea whether I'll be accepted or not, and their meetings occur on a Thursday as well. So, you know, I think we need someone who can commit to be there and can help with what's a very important issue. Our Economic Development Committee works very strong, very closely with them, and we need someone to carry on the flag.
Councillor McClure, would you put your, let your name stand? How often?
Well, they're not darn meetings. They're very good meetings, actually, and they are once a month, but of course there are extra meetings as called.
Yeah. Rob?
I would second that motion.
Rob, are you okay with it? Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. We have Councillor Mizzapelli appointed. All in favor? Carried. Thank you. Thank you, Rob. Okay, we're now on to RB5, the report regarding purchasing reporting. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, the report CS215-004 regarding purchasing report July 2014 to December 2014 be received. I need a seconder for this. Councillor Mizzapelli, thank you. Is there any questions concerning the purchasing report? Councillor DeBoer?
One of the things that, and actually the report's very informative, and it's nice to see, or it's interesting to see where a lot of these purchasings and stuff have happened. But one of the things that I think a number of us on council hear about is the time that it takes to get from the time we, for example, approve the budget, and then it goes out to tender, and then the tender documents, and how involved they are, and that sort of process, and the timelines between, you know, the approval of the budget and then the time that the documents go out and are come back. None of that's included in here. Is there any comment to, you know, what is the timing? Are you hearing the same thing, or is it just us and, you know, just the whole thing?
Through you, Mayor Thompson. We have a procurement process that we follow, and we provide staff with a procurement calendar so they can input the date that they'll have their scope of work or specifications ready, and it outlines for them how long it takes. We do have buyers that are assigned per department, and it's difficult to respond in generalities without knowing which specific procurement it was. A lot of times staff run and say it's urgent, and the minimum amount of time that we'd need is at least a week to prepare the document, 3 weeks to advertise and allow bidders to review the work and reply to it, and then have an opening. So we're looking at typically a six-week process from beginning to end. And keep in mind, this is for procurements that are over the $50,000 threshold and above. If it's a request for proposal where you're going beyond just looking at the lowest price, but you're evaluating submissions, it could take another 2-3 weeks, depending on the number of submissions you have from bidders, and then evaluating those. So it is a longer process, but we do provide staff with a calendar and saying, if you start on this date, this is when it'll be completed, so staff have the opportunity to plan their time accordingly as well.
Okay, and how would you comment? I've got a number of people that I deal with myself that also tender and don't tender to the town anymore because of the complexity of the documents. And when you look at, you know, a lot of cases, low bid tender, so the prices end up being worth very little margin unless your supplier is willing to be in on part of it. And the comment I get is that it's just too complex to even go through it. Why would they be telling me that about these documents, but yet they're still able to tender to, for example, TRCA and the City of Toronto?
Yeah. Through you, Mayor Thompson, I did review our bid documents, and our documents as of 2014 are a lot clearer. A lot of the document itself at the beginning tells you how to bid. So the document is very informative of what you need to do, the process, and how we're going to evaluate or look at those documents and then determine the lowest bidder or successful bidder. I looked at City of Mississauga, Brampton Region Appeal, and look at their documents, and ours are very comparable. There's nothing that makes it overly cumbersome. For some people, it's too much work, especially if you're working, let's say, in an automotive industry with a $200 margin. on completing a tender may not be worth your time. It depends on the industry and the amount of work that's required, but I think our documents have improved greatly over the past year.
And if it's a one-off, is there any ability, for example, for like all purchasing has to go through your department, or is the, can you purchase or can a department purchase outside of going through what your department does?
So the procurement bylaw, which was passed by council, allows for purchases between, you know, 1 cent to $10,000, requiring one quotation. So it's a simple form. You fill out what you need. Staff complete that themselves, email it to one bidder, gets it back with the price, just like you would any other quote for anything else you'd need on our forms. And that form contains terms and conditions which protect the town, obviously. And that's all you need is one quotation for up to $10,000. If your purchase is between $10,000 and 1 cent up to $50,000, the individual departments and staff run that process themselves where they issue three quotations. So same form, very simple. It's a two-page document. They add their scope of work or specifications, what they're looking for, and then it's awarded to the lowest bidder, and the manager or supervisor in that department reviews the three and makes sure that it's awarded to in accordance with the purchasing bylaw.
Okay, so, and the latter one is not included in this. You've got some, and we had a purchasing lesson here this morning a little bit, and you've got the sole source ones, mm-hmm. but they would still be sole source through your, and handled by your department, managed through your department.
Yeah, so what we did is we simplified the process. Instead of having to come to council for single source and sole source below 50,000, and it would take a lot more time and a lot more council's time, through the purchasing bylaw, it gives authority to the manager of purchasing to make that determination if it is a worthy single source or sole source. And I make that determination, and then I'm reporting to council twice a year versus you receiving all of these reports for low-value purchases. So this is the intent of this report, is also to notify council of those low-value single and sole source procurements versus tying up your time with individual reports for every procurement.
Okay, so the other purchases that don't show up here then would be sole source ones managed in department, and the $10,000 to $50,000 dollar ones that are managed within the department.
So any purchase between 1 cent and 50,000 is managed by the department. So that's for regular procurements. If the procurement involves a single source or a sole source, I review them, and I sign off and authorize it, and so does the director of the department. So single and sole source would always come through my desk, and that's why I report them on this report. If it's just a regular procurement and they're awarding through their department, we don't capture that here.
So that's only the one then that's the three quotes?
Correct.
So all sole source ones come through this document. So we really only, as far as an organization, we only do, was there maybe a dozen? Maybe not quite, four, nine. Nine either sole source or single source within the organization.
That have come through us, absolutely.
Okay, now you said that through you. Is that, now can you do a sole source or a single source through a department?
Absolutely, they're not supposed to.
What's left that comes to council, I think, is where Nick wants to get to.
Okay, so if it's a single source over 50,000, it would come to council for that decision. If it's an award over $2 million, even though it's within budget, it still comes to council. And that differs from the last purchasing bylaw we had, which was $250,000. Again, it's to relieve council of some of their time in reviewing reports where the procurement's made within the purchasing bylaw, within budget, and we're just coming to council to inform you. So this captures all of those procurements as well within the $2 million limit.
Yes. Okay, so really the only thing that isn't in this document are the ones that are three quotes dealt with in the department.
Correct.
And roughly how many of those items would there be? Very many?
There would be a lot of low value. We're talking 1,000, 2,000, 5,000. Small procurements that staff do for based on their projects and their needs. We have the forms on the intranet to make it very easy for staff to access the templates, a procedure on how to use the templates, and then managers that review and approve it as well.
Sign them off. Okay, and we don't necessarily get a report of that, but it's managed at the staff level.
Correct. It's managed through staff level, and they have their budget, and they work within their budget limits.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. Councillor Befford.
Amadeo, it wouldn't be a presentation for you if we didn't constantly harp at you about having local people provide us with service. And do you have a sense, number one, of any of an increase in local folks who are applying for our needs? And secondly, you've talked about changing the process. Have you gone out to the local people to try to convince them that we do have a better way?
Through you, Mayor Thompson. We have held How to Do Business with the Town of Caledon seminars, and they've been very productive and a lot of good feedback. Good. We've seen some more local businesses bid now that they're more comfortable with the process. You know, I'm putting in steps to encourage local bidders and all bidders. It's not making them with any special treatment, but to encourage them as well. Right. Our documents, we've simplified them over the past year to make it easier for local businesses. One of the reasons the thresholds was also increased from $25,000 to $50,000 before it comes to procurement. If staff have three local bidders that can provide the product or service, they can send out for three quotations with local bidders if they're qualified and able to provide those services. So there is more because they have that opportunity up to $50,000 to send it to three bidders by invitation.
Okay. Councillor Innes.
Going back to some of the issues that I know that some of our residents have expressed to us, an example would be the Caledon Day Committee's concerns with regards to their process of hiring a main stage act. Are you saying that this report, because they do spend up to $50,000, it's usually between $20,000 to $50,000, so they are not required to give three quotes, they could go through a single source?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, they would have their templates that they can issue their own quotations, and a manager, supervisor in that department would then sign off on them.
Quotations so, or quote? Like, are they required to have three or one? Because there's only one Kim Mitchell.
Okay, so I think it's two separate questions.
Okay.
So the Caledon Day Entertainment is a bit of a different category in its own, because you have to hire the stage and it comes with the entertainment component of it. And entertainment is actually excluded from the purchasing bylaw just because of that anomaly, if you will. It's very individual. You're not going to find another Kim Mitchell or such. Right. So the new purchasing bylaw, which was introduced last year, addresses that, so that if you have a sole source, you're not going to find another Kim Mitchell, for example. It's been eliminated from the purchasing requirement, but we do still have a contract with those vendors, to make it clear. So it does protect the corporation. We have an agreement in place. You know, there could be negotiations in place to protect the town, but it doesn't follow the three quotation format. So there are exclusions from the purchasing bylaw, which are included in the back of the bylaw itself.
Okay. And secondly, when it comes to you for the single source signing off, what are your timelines in that process?
So it really depends on what the single source is for. A lot of times we'll do an internet search. We'll contact our fellow Ontario public buyers through the association, and if they have any other sources that they've used, and if we determine that it's iffy and we may issue an expression of interest for a week and just send it out to the vendor community. We're thinking of awarding for this. Is there anybody out there that can provide this product or service? And it's about being open and transparent. We don't want to seem that we've made decisions behind closed doors. We've put it out there and said, is anyone else available that offers this product or service? And if that's no, then I would authorize it for staff. On the low end, on the quicker side, it's usually a few days, but it could take up to 2 weeks to make an award on a single source.
Okay. And thirdly, I'd just like to make a comment to add on to Nick's comment. The fact that some of the businesses haven't gone through the tendering process because they find it too tedious and the forms too difficult and et cetera, and trying to be as inclusive as possible and trying to promote local businesses and providing service to them. This goes back to my, I know we're not supposed to speak about notice of motions, but this goes back to my thought of it's time that we look at these processes and these forms from the perspective of our businesses and residents in the community to ensure that it reaches their needs so that they can apply for these positions. Because we want to use as many local businesses as possible.
Okay. I got some questions for you. And I know I've hammered at you for quite some time, but listen, I think you're trying to do a good job. But I guess the question is, since council has given you the authorization to do the purchasing with it coming to council all the time. We gave you that authorization to do it. How much quicker has the process picked up having to be able to do that?
Well, Mayor Thompson, it saves staff time about a month just not having to build a report and then waiting for it to go through the internal approval process, then come to council. So that in itself saves staff typically a month. And if you're talking a construction project for paving, for example, which could be $1 million, it saves them a lot of time in terms of getting that construction season in, making the award, and getting that work done. So it's time, but it's also getting the actual performance of the work done.
Question, you were talking about calendars of the process. Is that calendars of the department? Let's use Public Works, because there's a certain limit when you can buy trucks, because you miss that truck, because there's that little part of a calendar every year, and I think it's now, to purchase those trucks. And if you miss that calendar, each truck gets $5,000 more expensive. I'm just using that as an example, or the same as road paving and everything. And I understand our budget's running later, but getting it through your department, do you work on those calendars to know what the time deadline is so that we can get the maximum or get the best deal we possibly can, or are we missing that just because of the processes? Well, I think that's a question a lot of people ask us.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I've created is a procurement calendar for the entire year. And I sat with each of the directors and said, here's the calendar for the entire year. What do you need and when? And then we look at how priority it is, because we may have a month which is extremely busy. If there's things that aren't as sensitive, we move them over on the calendar and just create a timeline. So if they need vehicles to go out in February, then we put it on our calendar and we help that department get ready to issue those in February. So it's not just looking at an isolation per procurement, but looking at the total town needs for procurement, plotting it on a calendar, and then looking at how quickly we can get those documents done for each department.
Question I have is,
Mr. Mayor, I just want to add to Mr. Valentino's comment there. Mr. Valentino has made the offer to every director, given that our budget is delayed this year, to go out and actually put out a tender, put out an RFP to state that this is what we're looking for pending budget approval. So that offer was made to all directors.
That was my next question, so thank you for answering that, because that's what I was leading into. All right, so you've answered that. I got one last question. How we looked at inventory, when we're buying stock, there's times, and especially on the smaller stuff, and I call it the nuts and bolts. Just, it's an expression. Have we found ways to inventory versus going out and buying and purchasing all the time? I know at one time we got away from inventorying. So, and Councillor DeBoer and I have been through this process, but I'm just saying, I think the pendulum's gone one to the other, but have we looked at being able to bank on inventorying, I guess, is the question, especially, you know, for Public Works, especially as a huge department, as well as fire, and I guess that's a question I have for you.
Well, Mayor Thompson, what I've seen through other municipalities is that central stores environment is really dwindled. So keeping inventory and holding inventory ties up a lot of dollars as well for the corporation,
right,
which they can't spend on other items. What we have worked on is multi-year contracts where it's supplies on demand as needed. So for example, cleaning supplies, we have a multi-year agreement for cleaning supplies with one vendor. So we pooled all the volume that we would buy, let's say, for cleaning supplies. We saved 25% last year on all our cleaning supplies by pooling all individual department needs and facility needs into one contract. And that vendor supplies us the products we need at fixed prices for that term, and we don't have to hold that inventory. So it allows us not to tie dollars, but also to provide cost savings for the taxpayer.
No, and that's basically, I think we need to get that clarified, and thank you for clarifying that for us. If there's no further questions, I'll call the question. All in favor of the report? Kerry, thank you.
Thank you.
Moved by Councillor Innes, second by Councillor DeBoer, the report CS 2015-010 regarding the proposed amendments of the Development Charges Bylaw 2014-054 be received, and that the staff proceed with the amendments of the Town of Caledon's Development Charges Bylaw 2014-054, subject to findings of scope, development charges background study on incentives for love work units, redevelopment, development charge credits. Yeah. This is long overdue, in my opinion.
You said love.
Did I say love? I mean live.
Live.
Live. live-work, sorry. Anyway, it's a long afternoon. Coke can's empty. Now, okay, we got Councillor DeBoer.
2 points. The first one is that I'd also like to have added an amendment and having the words after the incentives for live work units added secondary dwelling on agricultural properties for farm workers. And I want to speak to the report. I'll move that as amendment.
Through your worship to Councillor DeBoer. So if this, it's up to you, Councillor DeBoer, if you wish to place that amendment on the floor now, then Council can amend, sorry, have a discussion or debate on the amendment, or if you wish to wait until placing that amendment on the floor to discuss the report, it's completely up to you.
Well, I think that this is consistent with the other item, so I would put this part on the floor and have it dealt with separately, and then have this, along with the other, all discussed together. So my amendment then would be secondary dwellings for agricultural farm properties.
Do we have a seconder, Councillor McClure? Or Groves beat you too.
Speak to it now. Yeah. Or you want to speak to the amendment and then we'll vote on it?
Okay, I'm going
to
read, let me read this one, Nick, and then we'll bring the next one. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, seconded by Councillor Groves, that paragraph 2 of the report CS215-10 be amended to add the following words: incentives for live work units, secondary dwellings on agricultural properties for farm workers.
And really this goes, it's consistent with what we've done in other with other things with supporting agriculture, and this will allow staff to have a look at. I think we've had some preliminary discussions, but in some cases our farm families are hiring or themselves and using a trailer to house farm workers. And the development charges end up being more than the trailer is worth. And that's one of the things that we've heard about quite often. So I think this is an area that we want to resolve. And that'll be it on that. The live-work units, I guess we should vote on that and then deal with the other.
Yes.
So I would reserve my next comment with regards to the whole motion.
Okay. So does anybody want to comment on this one, this particular motion that's here forward right now? If not, then I'm going to call the vote. Councillor McClure?
Yeah, that has to do with a neighbor. I think staff have heard about that, and it's just it's something I'm concerned about.
Okay, Gordon. All right, I'm going to call the vote on this. All in favor of this report, or amendment, I mean? Carried. Okay. Councillor DeBoer, it's back to you, and then I'm going to move
on. On the full amendment, I think this is something we've been waiting for, I think asking for a while. The live-work units, and actually it came up during the election, the live-work units that were proposed through the Caledonia Secondary Plan probably 10 or 12 years ago now, good idea. The only thing is that when we went to develop them, it was found that the development charges were charged on both the residential unit and then the commercial floor space. Made the development charges on the units very expensive. And knowing why development charges are charged and what the Development Charges Act says, I begin to think about when you have a commercial portion in the residential unit, you actually do reduce, I think staff will find out, but I think we do reduce the overall demand on the services, because you don't have, for example, the person living there driving off to work, but you also have the services within the community, so the people within the community, and that's what the live work units are basically meant to service, is stuff needed within the community. So it reduces the impact. So from the service possibilities like transportation, roads, it doesn't increase the demand. As far as the servicing, whether you're in your house living or working, there isn't an increase in water or sewer. So I think there's justification in having a look at it and trying to figure out a way to make these things happen. The costs, speaking to the developer, the builder, actually, the costs make the units very prohibitive. But this isn't something that was foreseen when the community decided, and I don't even think it was foreseen when we started looking at the design of the community 5 or 6 years or 4 years ago. So it is something that's kind of just came out recently. So
And I did mention to the director of planning is that Nobleton, there's a sign that says live work units. So I'm kind of curious as to how they manage it and if they've had the same thing. So, you know, all three of these projects are a chance to kind of have a look at the development charges and see what's reasonable and try and take out a couple of these hiccups.
Same challenge, Councillor DeBoer, is in Southfields, and that's why those units haven't moved forward. They've been sitting in vacant properties just because it just doesn't pencil out by anybody that's looked at it. Same thing. They even offered high speed and can't get it done, so it tells it. The next one is Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you to staff, on RB 6.3, there were some exemptions before made on diversified use buildings, green commercial / industrial buildings, hotels, bed and breakfast establishments. Do we have those also on condos, multi-story condos? Is there an exemption on those?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, there's no exemptions for condos, just these.
Okay, so but in the downtown core, I thought we had at one point passed, made an exemption to condo developments in the downtown core. Do we have that still, or?
Through Mayor Thompson, there are various rates for development charges. Multi-residential, depending on the size of the apartments, have different rates. The exemptions that I believe you're referring to, Councillor Groves, on the downtown cores are, we've got a Bolton core and we've got a Calvinese core where development charges are exempt.
Okay, but outside of those, outside of the core, multi-story residentials are not?
There are no discounts on multi-residential.
Right, okay, thank you.
Okay, next one is Councillor Misapelli.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Two questions I have on RB 6.3, redevelopment and DC credits. I'm not sure exactly what the review entails, but I kind of read into it that we're going to review if you have an existing home on a lot and you demolish it and rebuild either one unit or more than one unit, are we talking about reviewing whether you would get credit for that one building that was pre-existing?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, this is just looking at the wording and how it's defined in our DC bylaw right now. Okay. And just to kind of close the loop on some things.
Okay, yeah, and I'm fine for reviewing it. I would be cautious about removing that credit because that inspires redevelopment, which we're trying to do, the province is asking us to do, and it's smart growth. So I put that comment out there. And similarly, when we talk about live work and reviewing that, is this the same issue? I know when we did the DC review, the recommendation from staff was to remove the exemption on, I believe it was the commercial portion, or was it the residential portion, and as far as a credit. And then I thought there was comments from Economic Development Committee that said, no, you need to provide the credit on both. Are we rehashing that?
Through Mayor Thompson, the answer is no. The discussion at when we updated the development charge background study and bylaw last year was on the commercial cores, whether the DC exemption was just for commercial or could it also include residential. And what council decided was to provide the exemption on both commercial and residential in the commercial cores.
Okay, and so this doesn't change that?
That is correct. We're not looking at that. We're looking at when an existing building is demolished and then redeveloped.
Okay, so if in the commercial core, the existing building is live-work, would that have any implications?
Through Mayor Thompson, if it is in the commercial core, there is a DC exemption in the commercial core, so no DCs would apply. No town DCs would apply. Region and education would still have development charges.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, that's the end of questions, but I do have one. The big challenge is for seniors housing, especially less than 900 square feet is what they're looking for. The big challenge is they said, well, if the people die, the elderly people aren't there, then other people move in. The big thing is, are we looking for facilities for young families? And I know some municipalities are looking at smaller square footage as a further breakdown. Have we considered that, or have we looked at what other municipalities are doing at a reduced rate, especially for starter families or elderly?
Mayor Thompson, that was not included in our development charge review.
I realize that is in your review, but I mean, have you heard anything? Because I know there's starting to be a lot of buzz about being pushed. I know that's what Brampton, Mississauga are talking about. I'm just wondering the size, the smaller size, 900 or less square feet.
I
forget what it is in meters, but.
Yeah, so Mayor Thompson, in our current bylaw, we actually do have a different rate for the different sizes. I think it's up to 770 square meters and above 70 square meters.
Just divide by 10. So, yeah, okay, so that's like 700 square feet or less. Yeah, okay, so we have a significant reduction on that here now, right?
Yes, we do have different rates.
Okay, all right, well, thank you very much. Is there any further? Councillor Shaughnessy, sorry.
Sorry, I thought you were going to steal my thunder there. I did want to add into it, looking at the DC charges for seniors housing. It's something that is desperately need right across Caledon, not in a localized area. We need to provide developers with incentives because sometimes they're big on promises and short on deliverables. And I know they'd rather build the big houses, not the small houses, but we need some small houses that will work for our future seniors. So if we could look at adding the seniors housing into that review, I'd appreciate it.
So do you have an amendment on that?
Yes. Would you like me to read it?
Yes, please.
That paragraph 2 of the report, CS-2015-10, be amended to add the following after the words secondary dwellings on agricultural properties for farm workers and seniors housing.
Do we have a seconder on that? Councillor Befford?
Sorry, Jen.
Chat, of course.
Put your name on the list.
I was just finding your name.
Okay. All right, does anybody want to talk about this? Okay, well, she's read it. It's on the floor, right? I have to read it too? Sorry. Moved by Councillor Shaughnessy, seconded by Councillor Befford. And is the paragraph report after following the secondary dwellings on agricultural properties for farm workers and seniors housing. Okay. Councillor Befford, do you want to speak on that? Or are you something separate?
I'm going to speak to the original.
Okay.
I'll speak to that after you've passed.
Fair enough. Councillor Ennis, did you want to speak to this?
Perhaps Ms. Hall could answer this. What exactly is the definition of seniors housing? Because my concern is moving forward, and I don't know if this is a silly question to ask, but my concern is when, you know, we go out to these developers and builders and we say we specifically like to have seniors housing as part of your development, and they build them, they cannot discriminate who they sell their houses to. And then we're giving a reduced rate to a family or to a couple that are not seniors. So I just would like to specifically know what the definition of seniors housing is and if that could even be a reality to hold somebody to that.
I'd like to answer that question.
Oh, sure. Excellent.
Okay. Yep, absolutely.
Through you, Mayor Thompson. I think when we put this, when Councillor Shaughnessy and I talked about this, we put it together, and it was very general. And I think we need to come back to council with an answer in terms of dealing with that. And there are ways of dealing with it. So you could say that it's got to be a property that has a common dining room. So that kind of thing would then apply, because that way it would exclude younger families. If you want to do it for single-family housing, then maybe what you do is you put something in here similar to what we had for bed and breakfast, which is a discounting over a 10-year period or something like that. So there's a variety of ways of looking at different types of housing for seniors and how we can try to incent housing for seniors, and but at the same time make sure that we maintain the integrity of our DC bylaw.
And I think that's important. Thank you.
All right.
Councillor Ennis, yes, you're still on, or you should have been still on.
Sorry. So my question is, and should this then be removed from this section? Or, and then to further that, if we're going to be looking at seniors housing, realizing that that is a need in our community, we also know that housing with accessibility needs is also a need within our community, and should that too also be addressed through this report?
It's already there, isn't it? I think it's already there, isn't it, for accessibility? No,
we the only thing that through you, Mayor Thompson, what we've been doing on accessibility is universal design and trying to have that brought in by developers as part of their building program. And my understanding is the development approvals and planning policy area has actually brought that in with the Argo development in Mayfield West. We do know that, and I do believe the number was additional costs of about $8,000 a unit to make it universal design. Universal design does a number of things, width of door wells and that kind of stuff. So they are a little bit different, and they do require a little bit more assistance. But the marketability we haven't checked on yet.
Okay. Any other questions? Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks, and I think that was sort of leaning towards the same question with regards to how do you control it being seniors. And my suggestion as staff work through it is that when you look at, for example, seniors housing, is it part of a redevelopment opportunity or within the current built-up boundaries rather than greenfield? And the reason being, and my reasoning behind it would be, is that you've already got the services, you're redeveloping to something that's new. You don't have the delivery or the requirement of new services. You're really trying to make a better use of the services you have. Seniors dwellings, if you do it that way, would also quite conceivably be closer to, for example, the services, as opposed to building greenfield, which might either not be near services today or may never be near services, depending on which greenfield opportunity. I don't think, and it comes back to new members of council, I think when you bring this forward, this report forward, because I think this was one of these incentives, right? You're going to deal with it as incentives. So how does the incentives work on the whole development charges? It isn't something that's a zero. It's got to come from somewhere. So I think an explanation how the DCs work. I think we had a good explanation 2 years ago. I think you did it, where we were all a little bit surprised. And I think that's maybe the explanation that we need to have again when we start talking about incentive credits on the DCs and using them as a way to pull the levers to make things happen, but they don't come free. We think they do, but they don't come free. So that was just a couple of comments with regards to when this report comes back forward as to how we're going to deal with it.
Mr. Wong, did you want to say anything more on that?
I just want to thank Councillor DeBoer for the compliment there. I did review this 2 years ago and last year when we updated the DC bylaw. It's actually captured partly in this report. We will bring it back to council.
Yeah.
But basically all discretionary discounts and exemptions we provide to developers, this means that developers are not paying for a portion of the development charges. What this also means is that taxpayers then have to make that up, because the infrastructure has to be built, the growth-related infrastructure, new roads, new recreation centers still have to be built, and we get those dollars from development charges. So if we provide incentives for developers, we still have to make payment to make those reserves whole, so that when we need to build that rec center, the money is there in reserves.
Okay. Okay, but I think Councillor Shaughnessy, you want clarification on that?
Hit the button. I was just going to say, looking at DC charges through my campaign, I talked with a number of different people, and they said almost like a progressive DC charge. So if you were giving a lesser DC charge to a small home that was geared to seniors, you would be giving a higher DC charge to the guy who's building 15,000 square feet. So I'm just thinking in the long run, I think they start to balance. I don't see it as a lose. I can't see how providing an incentive on seniors' home is a lose for us, a lose for the community. I just think we have to make it up elsewhere.
Okay. Councillor Misipelli, did you want to talk about the seniors or just the amendment in general, or the motion in general?
About the seniors.
Okay.
I just wanted to make one observation, and Fuing did advise us that there is a reduced DC charge for, I believe it's 70 square meters, which translates to 800 square feet. Now, I'm not saying that that provides all the housing stock that seniors are looking for, but it certainly meets the needs of some. So currently we have something that if you build an 800 square foot condo or a unit, you will receive that discounted rate. So I think it's important for us to realize there is an incentive. And I'd go further to say it's not just seniors that are looking for that. I've also
young
met
families.
People who are just starting up and can't afford, you know, $500,000 on a unit. They're looking for that too. And that's another demographic we need to provide for. And the DC rate does provide an incentive for that type of construction.
Yep. Thank you. Okay. No further questions on this. I'm going to call the vote on in housing. All in favor of that? It's carried. All right. Now we're going to go back to the original motion. And I'm going to start with, did you want to ask anything more on that as well, Rob? I know you're good with that. Okay, Councillor Befford, you're on.
Thank you. I was going to bring up the issue of the seniors, and I'm glad we have an amendment to that. I guess the problem I'm having is that the seniors that I speak to, when you talk about 700 or 800 square feet, the junior seniors are looking at 1,200, 1,500 square feet. They're looking at a bungalow type of opportunity. And then they're also looking at an opportunity to move into a more significant care unit afterwards. And then we run into the problem of having to average out the numbers, persons and jobs per hectare, which makes it very, very difficult. So I don't know how we're going to overcome this, but that's what I see the majority of people wanting is something like Watermark in Orangeville or, you know, Rosedale in Brampton, places that they can go, sell their house, use it for others, younger people to move into, continue the depth of our community, but remain in their home community. And that's something that we've got to, whatever we do, we've got to encourage that. And I guess the only other question I have is, we've had suggestions that a developer, particularly in Alton, is going to try to create an artistic community, which would be a live work. In other words, someone would have sculpturing and would sell it out of their house. My question is, would that classify as a live work? And would there be reduced DCs on that type of situation?
Who wants to challenge that one?
That'll be something that we look at as part of the study. I mean, if we're looking at something very similar where it's two separate units, a live at the top and a work at the bottom, then it's something that would be subject to the two different rates now. But we'll look at that as part of the study.
Okay. No further. Oh, Councillor Annis.
Sorry. Perhaps I've missed it, but can you outline your timing to what are your expectations to come back to council? Just looking at the future PIMs that are coming up and dealing with future developments, particularly in my ward, this is of significant interest, not only to the developer, but also to the community members and our seniors that are looking to stay in this community, so timelines are very relevant for us.
Can someone answer that? Ms. Tollett?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, the timelines are outlined on RB 6.1 on the bottom there. That's the proposed schedule. The work is being done in-house by staff, so this is based on staff's timeline.
June 24th. Okay. All right. I'm going to call a question. All in favor of the actual motion? Thank you. I'm
going to move on to RB7. Moved by Councillor Innes, second by Councillor Groves, to report DP 2015-006 regarding Ontario Senior Secretariat Age-Friendly Community Planning Grant be received, that the commitment of age-friendly planning approach be renewed, and that staff directed to apply for the Age-Friendly Community Planning Grant development a planning tool to access the suitability of outdoor spaces for older adults. Any questions? All in favor? It's carried. RB8, I'm going to need a seconder on this one. DP 2015-011, current building permit issuance requirements and standards be received. Bylaw 2015-156 be repealed, replaced by a draft bylaw attached as Schedule A to staff report DP 2015-0011 to take an effect in March 3rd, 2015. Can I have a seconder? Councillor McClure, thank you. All right. Any questions? If not, all in favor, please. Carried. We'll move on to RB9, moved by Councillor Befford, second by Councillor Shaughnessy, the report regarding PW 215-005 regarding the completion of soil cap at Alton Village Square be received, and that the new capital project for the completion of soil cap remediation at Alton Village Square in the amount of $15,000 be considered for the 2015 budget deliberation and be funded from the tax fund capital contingency reserve. All in favor? Carried. Okay, moved by Councillor Misipelli. I need another seconder on the report, PW 2015-007, regarding provincial energy initiatives and municipal implications to be received, that the staff participate in consultation efforts on provincial energy and environmental areas of interest and concern of the town, and that staff authorize and submit a municipal energy plan funding application for the enhancement of an existing energy plan, and that staff submit a formal request to Hydro One requesting a written commitment from a senior Hydro One representative to supply the necessary energy consumption data to require the proposed municipal energy fund application. Should we put a timeline on this? Well, I know, that's what I mean. We're dealing with Hydro One. That could be 10 years from now. All right, I need a seconder for this motion. Councillor Ennis, thank you. No further questions. All in favor? Carried.
Here, I'll sign that. Councillor Ennis can sign it.
Okay, where are we now? Okay, moved by Councillor Groves, second by Councillor Ennis, that the minutes following the meeting to be adopted is written and distributed. Council meeting held January 13th, 2015, and the minutes following meetings be received as written and distributed. The Caledon Public Library held on December 8th, 2014. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor Misipelli, second by Councillor McClure, that the correspondent items listed in the correspondence package for the January 27th, 2015 council meeting be received. All in favor? Carried. Okay, public question period.
Am I pushing the red one? I can just leave it?
Yeah, whatever.
Good afternoon, council and staff and members of public, whoever's left. My name is Sherry Broche. I am a resident of Caledon. I just actually...
You got 2 minutes.
Looking for two? Yeah, it tells me 10, but I know that already. I'm just looking for clarification on two things that was brought up by council, especially Councillor Misipelli, and I appreciate the questions. through you, Mayor Thompson, to maybe Mary Hall, in regards to the OMB hearing for this Canadian Tire thing and the MZO or whatever you want to call it, you specified that this issues list would come forward, and if we as the public or whatever needed to actually become participants. Am I understanding that correctly? Because if that is the case, from what I understood participating in an OMB hearing years ago, that I am now liable for costs as a participant.
I do not have an answer to that question. I would have to seek legal advice on that one.
So do we have a lawyer in-house that could answer the question for me right now to get it on the record?
Not in attendance at this meeting, no.
But we can clarify.
My understanding of when residents' associations have been parties at an Ontario Municipal Board hearing and they have delayed the process and really have not resulted in proper action at the board, it was really more of a delay, the party can ask for cost at the Ontario Municipal Board. The board can issue costs. And in the case, the most recent one that I'm aware of was in Innisfil, where the Residents Association was required to pay cost to the developer. And I think it was a legal cost, if I remember correctly. But now that was a Residents Association, a resident. Okay, so I think you have to remember what it was at that point in time. If you're asking me about a resident, like a single person individual, I would have to check into that for you.
I think there is a difference, correct me if I'm wrong, between a participant and a party. Am I understanding?
Yes,
that
you're
correct?
Absolutely right. A party, you know, can ask questions, give evidence, cross-examine the whole bit. A participant basically just gets up, puts their evidence in, can't cross-examine or anything like that.
So yeah, I didn't.
We already have parties for this hearing.
Okay, so could you just maybe find out, like, as a participant or a party, what the difference is, and possibly so I know what that is, if that to for knowledge purposes. Appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Sherry. Any other questions from the public? Just questions.
Good afternoon. I just want to very quickly remind you, tomorrow is Wednesday, January 28th.
Oh, so can you give us your name, please?
Oh, my name is Christine Cooper. I'm the Executive Director of the Family Association for Mental Health Everywhere. And I just come from signing some documents to expand family support services northern into Caledon. Under the Central West Lynn, we just acquired some additional funding. So we're hoping to expand our family support program and our children's program, particularly into Valleywood and north. Into Northern Caledon. But I just want to take this opportunity to remind you that tomorrow is January 28th, which is Let's Talk. And for those of you who are online, the hashtag is Let's Talk, and we are also hashtagging it as Family Matters. So I just wanted to stop by on my way back from the northern part of Caledon to stop in and just make mention to encourage you to engage and participate, because it is a very important dialogue that is occurring tomorrow. And Caledon is being a very underserviced community in terms of mental health support services. So I'm very pleased to be able to announce that as officially this month, we are expanding our services north up almost to Orangeville.
Okay. Should send Thank us you. A proclamation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Thank guys. You.
Any other questions from the public? If not, Councillor Befford. Councillor Groves, I'm sorry, guys. All right, Councillor Befford.
I would like to ask, under general correspondence, it's great that we have those letters. There are two items on general correspondence that relate to Canada Post Service. I'm wondering if we could include with general correspondence sent. There are times when we ask for letters to be written to talk about an issue, and it would be nice to have those in the general correspondence received and general correspondence sent, so that we know that our request has been honored and we know that MTO or Hydro or whoever received those letters. I would like to ask you to consider that.
Sure.
through your worship, to Councillor Befford. We can take that in as part of our procedural bylaw review, but there's nothing stopping any letters that do get sent out just to be emailed to council so they're aware.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Councillor Groves.
Just to follow on Christine's comment with regards to mental health, and I think I've said this before, and I think Councillor Innes raised this as well, or Councillor Downey, the funding, we are really lacking funding in this area, and I know that having my business, medical clinic, we have seen and we continue to see mental health as a rising issue and a concern, because I'm not so sure that dollars are being focused there. It is, and it becomes cost prohibitive for certain individuals because they don't have coverage, let's say, through their workplace or private insurance that would cover some of the cost, and they need the service. So I don't know how we address this issue or where we go with this, but we do need to, I don't know, do we start a campaign? How do we do that? I mean, do we take it up to the region? Do we take it to Sylvia Jones?
I would recommend it goes to the region, but I do know there's a lot of funding that has come. I can tell you as a regional councillor, has come in the last little while that's come forward on that. Bernie? Procedurally, I can't, but I'll ask you afterwards if you can come up and fill us in. All right.
Thank you,
Councillor Groves. You know what? I will say we need to champion that forward. If you wanted to even do a notice of motion to shove it to the region, we can do it that way next time around.
Okay. Moved by Councillor McClure, second by Councillor Misipelli, following bylaw be read first and second and third time and finally passed, that BL 2015-006. To confirm the proceedings of the Council of the Corporation of the Town of Caledon and its Council meeting be held the 21st and 27th of January 2015.
All in favor?
I already have, if you were paying attention. Okay, Councillor McClure, can you move a motion to adjourn? And Christine, if you would, I need a seconder, Councillor Innes. You can come forward. You can just share real quick as we've adjourned the meeting.
I'll make